Chapter 2. I sat and I tried to do some basic math of if we continue at the pace we're going, how long it would take for us to get to the Revelation. And I quickly abandoned it because that math is hard. That's just there's no way to do it. And then I comforted myself with this. Well, we're going to be preaching messages until the Lord comes back or takes us home anyway, so I might as well just take my time. And that's what I intend on doing as far as our Wednesday nights, praying for guidance as to what to do with Tuesday, with Sunday nights. I'm not a big fan of always having to do a series. I don't think you always have to. But at the same time, I get a lot of thoughts that are a lot, that come with a lot of thoughts. Just pray for me as far as that goes. But Ruth chapter 2, verse 1. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him, in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. Now, when we look at this, we see, again, to our point of view, an accident. But to God, of course, there are no such things. God had plans for this bloodline. God had it written long before any of us ever existed what was going to happen here. But from Ruth's point of view, she just happened to be in Boaz's field. Verse 4, and behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless thee. Then said Boaz unto his servant that was set over the reapers, whose damsel is this? And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from morning until now that she tarried a little in the house. Now, there's a few things we have to unpack here to really set the stage for where I'm going to go with this. Number one, there was a system in place for those that had trouble feeding themselves. And that is by Jewish law, you could go in after the gleaners had harvested and take of any of the things that were left behind. And that was how they fed people that had a hard time getting food. It wasn't great. It wasn't a very proud thing to do, but it was an availability that they had. The next thing we want to look at is the word corn there. Of course, in my mind, the first time I read this many, many years ago, I'm thinking, well, how did they have corn? Corn was a North American, South American type thing. We have to get that we called corn what we called it, because we already had corn over there on the other side of the world. So when they came, they were thinking more of like a wheat or a barley type substance. And when they got on the boats and they came to the Americas, they looked at what the natives had, and they said, ah, big corn. Right? As opposed to what you'd see in the wheat and the barley, they would look at this. Well, it's a type because it grows in clusters, and that's how that would come to be. They didn't actually have the sweet corn that you and I would enjoy, that I know I enjoyed by complete branches this year. But it was a different kind of thing for them. It was more of a wheat or a barley. And you can take that and you can do different things with that. Get your bread, cakes, that sort of thing. And it was a great system set up to help those that maybe were struggling. Because unlike today, they didn't have a Taco Bell that hired 23 people. And you could go if you didn't have a job and go get one. You couldn't just go down to the marketplace and grab a job. You know, today, if you're looking for a job, what a market. There's now hiring signs everywhere. They didn't quite have places like that. If I was in the marketplace selling something, there were very few jobs to help the people with the things to sell. I either had to be a fisherman, I either had to have land myself to sell those things, or I, again, had to take one of the few jobs available by those people to sell those things. So if you couldn't find a job, which was likely, again, we're looking at Ruth and we're looking at the situation going on here, there wasn't a lot of opportunity. They're new in town again. Of course, for Naomi, she's coming home, but they're coming back. There's no home to come back to. There are no jobs to come back to, especially for their system here, or especially with them being women, there wasn't a lot you could just jump into. So the only thing available was for Ruth to go in and glean in these fields. Now, the title that I have for this is Man Versus Getting a Job. And that's important for us. Now, when I say job, I don't necessarily mean a 9-to-5 clock in at the factory or office type job, but labor in general. I have known people who work for themselves, and that's good. We have a few who are retired and should stay retired. And we have a couple of homeschool moms who I heartily encourage to keep at it. This is not a matter of, well, if you're not working right now, get into the workforce. We're not going to fix anything by doing that. But the point is this, is that if I have responsibilities, that I'd be putting in the work necessary to take care of those responsibilities. In Ruth's particular case, her responsibility began at what we looked at last week. Out of love, I'm making a commitment. And now because I've made a commitment, I have a responsibility. With those babies that are about to be born, it's very scary to be any type of parent. They say, well, the first-time parent is the hardest. You know, I've been through it 4 times. It's never felt good. I've never relaxed. There have been a few times where I've walked in going, all right, honey, this time I'm going to push the doctor out of the way and I'm going to catch. Those have always been jokes. I always have the intention of just staying right where I am, right close to a chair just in case. It's never an easy process. But you think a child comes in, that is a responsibility. From a very earthly standpoint, a child would be the responsibility just to feed it and to make sure it gets to school and to make sure it has clothing. From a spiritual aspect, we owe it much more, right? I owe you stability. I owe you emotional strength. I owe you spiritual strength to teach you, to give you the gospel, not just to give you the gospel, but to teach you a Christian lifestyle. Right? For those of you that are home, we have responsibilities to the home. Many of you have hobbies. Some of your hobbies make you money. You have responsibilities there. We all have responsibilities, and because we've made the commitment, we need to keep those responsibilities. This message is an attempt to keep us in a mindset of work or labor, though it cannot be overlooked that we have a major problem today with this. The news is calling this the Great Resignation, where so many people are leaving their jobs. You have folks who are doing so because they're lazy. They have no desire to work. Then you have folks that are leaving it because those lazy people quit a long time ago, and it's made the workforce so impossible that it's draining the life out of you. Brother Dennis, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There are people that could be working that left, and now the people that remain who want to keep their promises and want to keep their paycheck, it's breaking their backs to keep up. And in many ways, we're going to have some severe issues going into the winter months, again, because of this, because the workforce that could be working is sitting at home, and the workforce that is working is wore out and tired. So we're going to have a rough time. So again, if you see somebody clocked in, be nice to them. Right, or else they might not be there the next time you go in. All right, you need them. Be nice to them. Be sweet to them. But there have always been lazy people in every society in all of history. I've often heard the 80-20 principle, where 80% of the work was done by 20% of the people. And you know what? I've been blessed. This has rarely been the case in my life, but I know that it's out there. I've heard of it, where you've got 20% of the people doing almost all of the work in a work situation. I've heard this principle in a church where the vast majority of people can't be bothered, so only 20% of the people do the work. And after a while, when that church breaks up and falls apart, it's normally that 20% of people that stays behind. Now, thankfully, we don't really have that mentality. It's more of a throwing elbows and having to set a schedule so everyone gets a turn kind of thing here at our church. I think, again, we've had it to where we scheduled. By the way, I forgot to mention the hedges. Are the hedges all done? They're not all done. But a lot of them have been done from what I could see. Again, we scheduled a thing. Somebody snuck in early. That's home church. When people ask me, how do the people do work at our church? I said, we plan it, we schedule it, people sign up for it, and then somebody sneaks in and takes care of it. So you show up and it's already done. And that's typically how things happen. But we see this idea of, well, I don't have to be a part. What does this best serve me? These people make up that lazy faction. They don't work, they don't want to work, and if you make them, they become slow-moving obstacles in the process of your day. That is not to say that a person is born one way or the other. I don't believe that we are born lazy or born motivated. I think it's a mindset that we develop, and we can undevelop bad habits. We can and many need to develop a work ethic, both physical and mental toughness to do the work that is required of us to do, regardless of the setting that we are in. Right? We've seen that. I was in a position one time where I was talking to one of my maintenance technicians, and I said, well, how can I best help? He goes, what I would like is to borrow somebody from another site. I go, we're really short-staffed all over the place right now. I can't borrow somebody, but I can get you a temporary person from one of these temp agencies. And he laughed. He goes, I want to make the job easier, not make the job harder. And in his defense, the last five people that we had hired from outside showed up with no tools, showed up in pajama bottoms, and had no desire to do the work. And to where you'd have to sit there and consistently tell them what to do, how to do. He says, listen, he goes, it's a great program. It's great that we got a discount with them, but I don't have time to teach anybody anything. And that was a very proper thing for him. And then, of course, we'd get those people, and I'd go to try to find them, and they'd be asleep in one of our units. Just a vacant unit, they'd be asleep on the inside. There are people that are filled with that. I don't have to. I'm a temporary person. Or I'm here to get the best that I can out of it, right? Oh, somebody needs help. What's the pay for that? What's in it for me? And, of course, that drives us nuts as Christians as we look at the world and we see that. Many of us, we look inside of our families and we see that. Hey, why'd you quit that job? That was a good job. And, of course, whatever story they tell us is not good enough. It's like, why would you do that right now when good jobs, everyone's hiring, but good jobs are still at a premium, in my opinion. Now, what Ruth could have done is she could have, you know, hung on to Naomi, said, all right, Naomi, we'll go to where you want to go. We'll go back to your home, and I'll do all the things I promised, but you got to feed me. And it would be up to Naomi to kind of buddy up to some friends and maybe kind of sleep on someone's couch for a while and get some of their food. But instead, Ruth steps up and says, I'm going to go out, and I'm going to get the food. Now, this probably wasn't pretty. Much the same today, nobody likes the idea of not having the best of things, right? There was a time where my wife, and I've said this before, it was corned beef hash and kidney beans, and we were glad to have it. And then as things got better and we worked harder and we made more money and she got out of college and everything was going great, we got to eat better. But you know what? We ate, and that was good. And we've got things today to help people to eat who can't eat, who have a hard time with it. And you know what? I hate the fact of people abusing it, but I'm okay with the fact that it's there. What are we going to do? Let people starve? No. We should have certain things. There should be things that we're doing. I'd much rather give it to our own people than shuttle it overseas to a bunch of people who are saying death to America. That's how I feel about it. I'd much rather feed our veterans and the starving people in our own country. And if we had enough, go maybe feed some starving people over there. But we give money to people who come in illegally. We have money for people who are cheating the system, and that bothers me. But all the same, it may not look pretty what you do to survive, but it's important that we take what we have and we do good with it. We would have people come in all the time. There are different things in housing, by the way. There's what we would call market rate. I did market rate housing. I put a price on it, and you either could afford that price or you didn't. And if you couldn't, have a nice day. And that's good. And then you have Section 8 housing. That's where government funds the majority of your rent. And, of course, depending on the mathematics in your county, would depend on how much you'd have to pay. So they would give you, let's say, $1,000 to put towards your rent. You would pay the difference. And you would need to find a site that is Section 8 approved to do. Then you have income-based housing. where it would just be a percentage of what you make would be into what that is. So quick, you'll crash course as far as that goes. I'd have people that would come into my apartment community where I was charging $1,450 a month, $1,450 a month, and then you would do gas and electricity on your own. That's expensive. But I have people come in all the time going, well, can I get a discount? Because my cousin has Section 8, and I understand that there's ways for you to pay less. Well, that's not what we do, but I do have this list of people that do that, and I also have the instructions on how to sign. No, I don't want one of those apartments. I want one of those, but at the Section 8 price. They say, well, that doesn't work. Well, that's not fair. I go, ma'am, I sell them, and I can't afford them. That's not fair. Just what it is. Right? And I'm sure I could work out a discount with the boss. If you want to sign up, we are hiring right now. But other than that, that's the only discount I know of that we do as far as that happens. They're too proud to take the first steps. They don't want the entry-level job position. They want the six-figure-a-year right-out-of-college job. And they're willing to sit in their parents' houses and basements until they get that six-figure offer that ultimately never comes because you got to work your way there. They'll come in and they'll look at CEOs who've been in the business for 40 years, or they'll go into a business where the owner has owned the business for a severe amount of time and become very jealous and upset that they're not making more of what the boss makes, given that they don't have any of the risk that the boss makes. So all the same, Ruth had this idea. She goes, listen, there's food to be had. I'm going to get it. And again, we see her heart. I promise to stick with Naomi. So that's what I'm going to do. And of course, in this, she is abiding by God's plan. Again, coincidences are just God's way of staying anonymous. And I firmly believe that in this story. She didn't just bumble herself into a romantic comedy. This was God's plan. It was just happenstance from her point of view, but it was God's plan all along. And as she's working, she catches the eye of Boaz. One, we've got somebody who doesn't look quite like us, never seen her around before. Again, Jewish communities at this time, very close. We understand each other. We spend a lot of time together between the festivals and the rituals and everything that they would go through. Even though they had forgotten a lot of things, we'd still be a tight-knit community. So she's new. Oh, she came in with Naomi, and she asked if she could just come in after the harvesters. Oh, and he gets his eyes on her. Verse 9, let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged? Sorry, I'm sorry, verse 8, I went too far. Then said Boaz unto Ruth, hearest thou not my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? And when thou art athirst, go unto the vessels and drink of that which the young men have drawn. So he's looking at her, and we're starting to see some things. Number one, sitting down solves nothing. If she sat wherever they were with Naomi and they were to have begged and not put in the effort to go in and get the food as free as it was, as maybe as unappetizing as it was, that desire to go out and get the resources available, right, there would have not been this opportunity. Again, we get up and we do things. There was opportunity out there. Was it attractive? No. Right? We've often been forced with that. When Danielle and I were first married, I became incredibly ill. I had some very bad stomach pains growing up as a child. Almost bled to death in the first couple weeks of our marriage. She found me just kind of passed out, took everything in her to get me out to the car. Spent a week and a half in the hospital just trying to get right again. Right? Horrible. We didn't have insurance. It was a mess. Right, company came in and said, hey, listen, we've got a program for you and we can help you pay this bill. We know that you don't make money. Well, at the time I was a dog trainer. She was part-time at CVS in the pharmaceutical technician department, or she was helping the pharmacist out, and she was doing school. She'd finished one degree. She was working on her second, and that's where we were. We didn't have a lot of money. Say, hey, listen, we could do this. And in me, I got kind of flustered at that because well, no, I'll pay for it. And then they showed me the bill, and I go, I don't know how I'm going to pay for it. That was a lot. When you're young, you have these ideas. I always had mom and dad's insurance. So what was the bill going to be? A few $100, no big deal. It'll take us a while, but we'll pay it off. We could not. It was thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. Charity came in, said, hey, we'll pay this for you. And they paid it. And I was grateful because I probably still would have been paying that off. It was huge. Now, in my pride, I rejected that. But all the same, it was there. All the same, it was there for people like me. Amen. You work with what you can. What would have been the better solution for me to default on that loan, declare bankruptcy, and they never get paid? That was on the table. That's what a lot of Americans do, don't they? Right. What about the vast amounts of credit card debt that we see today? Instead of maybe not stopping off at Starbucks and buying these $7 coffees and maybe not buying Nikes every other week and not buying the brand new iPhone every time one comes out, maybe instead we save and we pay that off. Maybe we cut down on our spending. Or not, we'll just declare bankruptcy and those people will never get paid or I'll end up having to pay some kind of subsidized amount. It's a mess. What we do is we got to take the opportunities that God's given us. Right? And some of that opportunity is intelligence. Some of that opportunity is availability of funds. Some of that opportunity is just, again, being able to put in the work. And that we ought to have a willingness to do work. I see a problem at the church, and I bring that up, and we go to address that. I see a problem among the family. All right, that's going to take a little effort for me to do, but we're going to take care of this. And that ought to be what we have. Right now, we've got a shortage of that. Of all the things we have a shortage of, we have a shortage of the willingness to labor in our country right now. And of course, we need to have a willingness to make things work, regardless of how attractive those things may be to have to make work. Again, it wasn't very, you're picking through, and all you're really getting when you're gleaning like this is the stuff that the harvesters didn't want or dropped or forgot. Right? So imagine I'm going through this part, and here's one that me as the harvester sees. Okay, well, that's got worms in it, and I'm going to throw that over here. And as I'm bundling up my pack, I'm dropping a couple, and people are stomping on it, and it doesn't look all that attractive. And here comes Ruth behind, and she's snapping those little bits of the bad parts off. And, okay, well, only half of this has worms. I'm going to take this. I'm going to put this in my bag. Taking that advantage of what can I make work and getting it done. Is it attractive always? No. Some of us, we don't like the idea of maybe a 14-hour work day. I had to have some of those. Why? Kids. Bills. Right? Responsibilities. My wife got it in her head that we were going to take a vacation. I go, hey, that's a great idea. But we have to make the money. And again, not that we should ever work to the abandonment or to the problem causing in our families. But we have to do the work to get the things done. Secondly, we see as this continues on that her labor and her willingness open the door to more opportunities. So Boaz looks at her and says, hey, whoa, don't go anywhere else. Stay right here in my field. Because as somebody who's just gleaning after the reapers there, once all the good stuff is gone, what do? You pack up and you go to the next field. He goes, oh, stay. And when you're thirsty, drink some of this. And I've told the men not to bother you because we understand how some of these guys might have been really uncomfortable. And we see these also that there's a group of women that would stay, maidens that stayed together. And of course, we understand the threat of that. And why I told him not to touch you. All right, stay. Drink of the water that we pull up for them. I want to make this comfortable for you. There are a lot of folks out there who want to live comfortably without having to work. They want life to be very much the way it was in the garden. No sweat, just food. When they do work, they want a large amount of reward for what work they do. And I don't necessarily disagree with the notion that you ought to work for the greatest possible reward that work can give you. However, much like the parable of the field hands who agreed to work a day for a penny, you work hard for what was agreed on. Somebody gave me one of the best bits of advice I've ever had. I was working for them, and I saw productivity go up. And it went up by a certain percentage. And I came into the boss and said, hey, listen, I worked really hard for you, and I brought the percentage of productivity up to this amount, and I think that means that I should get a raise. That's a good thing to do. If you feel as though you come in with numbers. And he said this. He goes, all right, listen, I want you to take a look at this. You brought it up to this percentage. And then he did something I'll never forget. Pulled out the job requirement for my job. Laid it down and said, you brought it up to the level that you're required to have it at. That means I can now, over a period of time, afford you as you are paid. And I go, oh. He goes, now, if over a period of time you beat those numbers and I make more money, that means I can afford maybe to pay more of my bills. And then if there's any left over, we can look at the budget for the next year and see if we can afford more for salaries, including my own. Oh. See, in my head, that's how that works, because that's what you see on TV, right? I immediately deserve more money. Now, again, be your own advocate. I've gotten raises by asking for raises. That wasn't the first time I pulled that trick. And it was the truth. Hey, these are the numbers of what I've produced for you. This is the money we've made because of the things that I have done. Can I have some more? That makes sense. That's good to do. But at the same time, what they want is, well, I've showed up 5 days in a row. I deserve a bonus. It's where it gets out of hand that's the problem. Right? I saw this one thing. I chuckled. It was for a McDonald's. It was a $1,000 signing bonus for McDonald's. When I first got married, I was working as a dog trainer. Because I got sick, I missed a lot of classes. The business started to tank, so they let me go. Because I wasn't able to show up to the classes. I wasn't really able to stand much. But I got a new job after a while. You know what that job was? Scrubbing floors at McDonald's. And I scrubbed those floors. And after a while, I sat there and I worked with the bosses. And I was paying attention to some of the guys. I go, hey, can I learn how to do that? And can I learn how to do that? And can I learn how to do that? Folks, I wasn't even working on the food line. I was scrubbing the floors. I'd go outside and scrub the floors out there. You know those little tiles they got in the front door? I'd go out and I'd clean over here. Can I learn how to do that? Yeah. After a while, they said, now you're a real maintenance guy. And I made, like, I can't remember what it was $8.50. An hour is what I made. There was no sign-on bonus. I was grabbing onto a life raft, right? That's what that was. $1,000. That sounds great. Well, and then I heard a conversation between two people. Well, it's at $1,000, but to get me to work at McDonald's, I need $2,000. Well, what happens when your graduation money runs out? Well, I don't know. Guess I'll have to see what I got to do then. And again, do what you know you can do. At no particular point would I ever stoop down unless I had to. But if you're not working, work. Work provided for her an opportunity. You know, when I would go to work and I had that job, it wasn't just a responsibility that I had. It wasn't just I'm here solely for money. Eventually what I did is I got to where I cared. Now, brother, isn't it nice when you hire people that care? They want to see the project done, because there's two different kinds of people. There's the people that just want to see the paycheck, and then there are the people who want the paycheck and they want to get things done. I told this joke one time in a meeting, and they didn't really appreciate it. They said, all right, well, let's go around the room and say what we most like working for. I like working for my bosses. I like working for my coworkers. I like Tuesdays when this happens. I like all the great things. Matt, what do you like? I like the paycheck. And I thought it was funny. I said this. I go, if y'all ever cancel payday, I'm out of here. And nobody laughed. The boss is just kind of, well, Matt, that's very narrow-minded. It's like, listen, I can be your friend outside. Now, not all of you, but let's be honest. If I was looking for someone to talk to, I've got those people. I could run into you on the street and we could be friends. I'm not going to come work here because I love you folks. I have worked with horrible conditions. I have worked with amazing conditions. And you know what the end result of all of it was? The paycheck. So I was there for. I could make friends sitting at home. It was my goal. That was my heart. But again, as I would be there, I would care about my to-do list. I would care about the projects. When I would sit there and I would do one financial statement with the owners, I'd get super excited to try to beat those numbers the next time I saw them. Why? Because I like seeing things get done. I'm competitive that way. I care about these things. And that ought to be a dying art nowadays. Well, I don't care about the company's resources. I don't care about the mission statement. I don't care what we're doing as a church. All I care about is what I get out of it. Saw this beautiful picture today. It was of two different ships. One was a cruise ship. One was a battleship. It says the church is not a cruise ship where we're all there to have fun. Battleship is church is a battleship where we're all here to work together. And that's what we are. Well, you know, I'm just there. You know, if the lighting's good, if the preaching's all right, if I like the music, if I like the decor, I'll go to that church. If not, I won't. I'll go somewhere else. We ought to care about the things we're set to labor about. And as we work hard, 2 Thessalonians 3:10, for even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. As we work, we get better opportunities. Now listen, there are some days at the house, you stop off on the way home and you grab maybe some McDonald's. You're not cooking today. And sometimes I'll come home and I'll see Mama and I go, we're not cooking today. We got to do something. That's not going to work out. All right, there's not enough time for me to cook, but we got to do something. We got to help Mama. We're not doing that today. You know, that's fine. That's good. That's fine. But you know what? Don't you eat better when you make it yourself? I've always complained about, like in the last year when you couldn't go to the restaurant, I've always complained about having to bring food home because it's never good. That's what I want. I want some medium warm food straight out of a styrofoam container that was probably packed over there in Pakistan in a factory with no regulations whatsoever. For all I know, right? For all I know, there was either a rat over there where this box was packaged or a rat in the restaurant, because I came from downriver. A rat that was in there in the restaurant that could have been in this package. No, thank you. Isn't it better when you do it yourself? I'll be honest, she's not here and I didn't record. I don't have my thing up so I can say this. Daniel's a far better cook than any place I've ever been. Eat better. Right? There's leftovers. You don't mind those leftovers because they weren't sitting inside. I got opinions on it. You do better when you work harder. When we were first married, and it was, again, whatever we could get out of a can and get real cheap at Aldi, where our entire grocery shopping list depended on the sale aisle at Aldi or Kroger. When you worked harder, you ate better. And that's the thought. Hey, and you get this, well, church ain't what it used to be. Here's a question. Are you working hard, as hard as the people that used to work, that made church worth it for you? Well, so-and-so's gone, and so-and-so's gone, and they always used to do the... Great! Are you taking over? Oh, why are you different from them? Oh, it's the truth. Our congregation is better when we work. Our family time together is better when we work. When we put effort into it, when we make some, put a little bit more into it than what we normally do, and we get better circumstances. Boaz looked at her and said, listen, she took care of Naomi. Naomi's my kinswoman. I'm going to take care of her. And from better circumstances, we get better opportunities. As we continue on in verse 12, and the Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken friendly unto thine handmaid, though I be not like unto one of thine handmaidens. And Boaz said unto her, at mealtime come thou hither, and eat of the bread, and dip thy morsel in the vinegar. And she sat beside the reapers, and he reached her parched corn, and she did eat, and was sufficed, and left. So it wasn't just the, hey, let her glean with you, don't touch her, but there was also passages that we're running out of time, so I won't go into it, but leave her some of the choice bits. Leave her some good stuff. And as he's talking to her, he's encouraging her, hey, let the new God that you're learning about, let him bless you. And she says, thank you. And she's being very generous. She's being very kind about it. And she's being very grateful about all the things that he's doing. You know, he said, no, why don't you come eat with us? When we sit down to eat, why don't you come eat with us? See, all this kindness coming in, none of it would have happened if Ruth just stayed home waiting for Naomi to take care of her. Instead, she saw the responsibility that matched with the commitment that she made, and she stepped in to do something about it. Work fits into this story. Last week, we saw how love leads to responsibility. This week, responsibility leads to work. I have a responsibility. I'll talk sometimes about family devotions and husbands. I'm talking right at you when I say this. Lead your family spiritually. Well, I'm not really good. You signed up for it when you became the head of the house. When you became a husband, when you became a father, you signed up for that duty. Right? I've got three boys. I've got to teach how to be men, good men, godly men, kindly men, strong men, work ethically enabled men. Right? And that, whose job is that? As mine. Whose job is it for the husband, though your kids may be gone, to comfort the wife, to strengthen the family together? And I think I've said this before. I know a couple whose family devotions are just the husband reading scripture to the family. And I'll tell you right now, that's much better than leaving the family spiritual strength up to chance as truth. Well, brother, you know, we've been married for quite a long time, and it seems kind of awkward to do that. Or you know what, my kids are a certain age, they're not used to being able to do this. Well, there it is. It's going to be uncomfortable for a little bit. Y'all okay with that? Sometimes things are awkward to start off. They are. But because something's awkward, does that mean we don't do it? Because something is difficult, does that mean we don't do it? And because we have to struggle with it, does that mean that we don't start off maybe light and then build into it? No, we have to take the opportunities that God gives us when we have responsibilities. If we're ever going to get the rewards that we seek out of life, we must be willing to work at them. I sat down, I set a certain goal for myself in my new recent Bible study that I just started. And I said, hey, I'm going to answer these questions. And I went through that passage of scripture and I wrote down all the questions that I have. And I told myself, I'm going to study this out till I have a working knowledge of most of these things. That book's the book of Revelation, by the way. There's a lot of questions I have on that book. I got through the letters. You know what I'm stumped on right now? I'll just share this with you. You know what I'm stumped on right now? At the end of all the letters, there was a special reward for those that stuck with the stuff. I'm looking at some of those rewards. Go ahead and take a look at that this evening before you go to bed. What does he mean he's going to give him a morning star? What does he mean that he's going to be a pillar in the New Jerusalem? And what does that mean? You know, I'm just kind of looking through those things, trying to answer those questions. That's my goal. If I ever want what I want, I've got to put in the work. Am I right? It's exactly what you have to do. We can't just sit there and say things are difficult, and I don't want to do that. Now, again, look at me, because I have to say this because of who you are. We're not talking about all physical things. If you physically can't, you're not expected to. That's what God. That's how God designed it, right? As much fun as we had out there working with the kids in sports, if you physically can, I had no intention of Mary out there teaching kids how to kick field goals. It's just not what I wanted, though I firmly believe you probably could. That's not, if there are restrictions to certain things, that's fine. If there are restrictions up here, I don't know enough, you could always learn. And as much like I said at the beginning of the study, it may take time, but what else were you going to do? What else were you going to do in 6 months? What else were you going to do for the next 3 weeks? You're going to have, if the Lord gives you 3 weeks, you were going to have 3 weeks. You might as well have done something with them. You might as well have gotten better during that time. Put some effort into it. Well, brother, I thought we were just talking about having a job. I was comfortable because I was retired. No, we flipped it around a little bit. You got to work spiritually if you ever want any kind of reward out of it. And a lot of time that reward is a better opportunity. So that the next time temptation comes up, there's that verse you've been working on. And it comes in, you say, Lord, I had no idea I was going to need that. I've never needed that verse before. And there it is. It's a good thing I practiced Bible memorization. It's a good thing I started doing this. Or there are times where you sit there and say, hey, listen, we started doing these devotion things, and I've noticed we fight a lot less. Hey, I've noticed that we have a lot more attention span for spiritual things because we put the effort into it. Hey, you know what? I find more out of the sermons because I've given more of my private time to study. That's what your mama meant when she said, if you stare at the TV for too long, it'll turn your brain into mush. You stare at useless things, your brain's useless. You focus on the things you're supposed to, your brain gets stronger. Right? You think, flip that over to physically. If all you eat is pudding and applesauce and cakes and all the delicious food in life, what's going to happen? You're going to have a soft, weak, very soft body. I'll be able to do much. You'll climb up those stairs coming up out of that office down there, and you'll get winded, right? That's what happens. But if you've got one that's being fed right, being worked good, you're going to be able to meet challenges you weren't able to do before. Spiritually, it works the same. If I'm sitting there zoning out in front of a screen all the time, there's no mental toughness here. If I'm not reading, if I'm not studying, if I'm not working at something, there's nothing more that's going to be done. I'm going to be weak to temptation. I'm going to be one that doesn't grow as much as I should. Ruth put in the effort that she was supposed to, and it opened more doors. Instead of coming home with maggoty corn, she was able to come back with more choice bits. She was able to do more. They were able to eat better. Instead of having to wait till she got back, because you think about it, having that corn in your hand wasn't necessarily food right then and there. You know, nowadays, like, you know, I could reach through, I could grab a ear of corn, probably eat it right there. It wouldn't be great. But if I was starving, you'd get the job done. You'd have to sit there and mush the stuff down, grind it into wheat, bake it into something. It took effort. So she wasn't anywhere near being able to eat. What's Boaz do? Don't come eat with us. Sit at the table. Get you some strength. Give her the choice bits. Let her drop some things down there, some good stuff down there for her to come and get. Again, not wanting to insult her pride, no doubt. Also wanting to be kind without it making it look like he was flirting with her, because I do believe that was a little bit of what was going on there. We'll look more at that next week. Much that, you know, when I'm sitting here and I'm preaching and my sermons aren't amazing, I know that. The more I hear other preachers, the less I like of myself. But sometimes when I'm giving you stuff, you can't just eat it right here. Sometimes the Lord's got something buried in that message for you. You got to go home and you got to grind it down a little bit. You got to take those verses and you got to mill them out. And you got to bake them up and you got to really think about what it is. Same thing with Bible reading. There'll be times I'll read myself. It's probably not a nice word. I'll read myself stupid. Sometimes I'll be sitting there, I'll be looking at something for so long. I'll get that phone call from Danielle. Are you coming home? And I'll look at the clock and I'll go, whoa. And I'll about drive into the fence trying to get out of here just because my brain's somewhere else. You gotta work on it. Sometimes you gotta mill it out. Sometimes it's a lot to carry. You gotta pull it apart piece by piece. That's why the Bible says not just to read it, not just to study it, but to meditate on it. You gotta do more with it. You know, it's always a fight to make sure that you're handling your responsibilities. And I would say this, that in the growing ideology that things just happen, right? Well, they just happen. You know, millionaires, they just show up and somebody gives them money. And that's how they became millionaires, because somebody just gave it to them. And same thing with billionaires. They just gave it to them. And in many cases, that is the truth. Mom and dad die, you get the billions of dollars. But anyway, that is true. But these things just happen. We've got that kind of growing. Well, it happens to the rich people. And we need to stop it from happening to the rich people. And it needs to happen to us. Well, most of the time, those are people who've built businesses and done great things. And we can't drain their bank account and give it to somebody else. Right? If I were to give $50 to Xander, how long do you think that would last? Dad, can I go to the store? 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 We probably wouldn't buy anything good. We wouldn't. We'd come home with toys or something silly. And many people, they never grow out of that mentality. You could take a certain person and give them $1,000, and they'll go out and they'll buy the brand new phone, they'll buy shoes, they'll spend it on clothes. And you can give another person $1,000, and they'll make sure their bills are paid, and they'll find a way to invest whatever's left, and they'll continue to grow on. Those are two different mentalities. We need to have the mentality that's able to take things and make things more out of them, especially when it comes down to the spiritual things. How do I apply to deeper meaning, not a different meaning, but a deeper meaning than what I'm just picking up off the top? We have to build. We have to make things happen. Right? Well, I don't really know a lot of Bible because my pastor's young and he doesn't teach all that deep. But how old are you? Now, nobody here in the church has ever said that to me, and I don't expect that to ever be the opinion, but it's a fun straw man to fight. Right? How long have you had the Bible? How old are you? How you can pick that thing up and read it? You know, this way and up and down. You figure that out. Right? I got tools you could use. Now listen, we need to make things happen. And you know what? When it comes down to either spiritual work or it comes down to actual work, we can't always expect things to come out right. You know what I wish? Red Green. Who quoted Red Green recently? Red Green is one of my favorite comedians by far, by the way. And he told this joke. He goes, every man has his mountain. And if you're a single man, that mountain's probably laundry. I wish all of our laundry was done. Raise your hand if you wish all your laundry was done. Man, that'd be good. You just go home right now, all the laundry is done. Wouldn't it be nice if the dishes would always just take care of themselves? If you could honestly, we work hard on this, but have you ever, gotta be careful, have you ever gone to bed and there's still dishes in the sink? That cardinal sin. Sometimes the dishes are in the sink. Sometimes there's laundry that's not left, that's not done, especially in houses where we got some kids in there, right? I don't know how many kids we got, but judging by the laundry that we have, I'd assume we've got at least 30, right? We got clothes. I'm not even sure my kids could fit in, show up in the laundry. It's not always perfect. The goal is not always perfection. Now, that's what we work for, right? We work to be able to say, I've never left the dishes in the sink. I've never gone to bed with laundry still needing to be done. I've never left the lawn on mowed. I've never this. As much as we'd love to say that, there are days where we sit there and we run across that and we go, oh, I didn't do it. I hate it when I get home. And that tablet, I've gone from writing everything down on my to-do list and everything in my notebook to having it on that tablet so that it yells at me if I don't have anything to do. So I'll open it up. And I'll get that ding. I hate that ding because that means I messed up. Oh, I didn't do that, and I didn't do that, and I didn't. That tears you up. You know what? There's going to be those moments. And we should limit those moments as best we can. But that's not the purpose of tonight's message. Tonight's message is, are we doing the work? Because while you're upset that you woke up and there was the cake dish left over in the sink, there are people out there who have moved out of their apartment because they quit their job, they can no longer afford the apartment, and they left all the dishes in the sink. And now someone like me is in there throwing them away. You understand? We have some serious problems. While you're sitting there going, you know what? We've sat down and we're reading the Bible, and it doesn't look as attractive as other families' devotions. You're doing far better than what you were doing when you were doing nothing. We need to put effort into it. And not just effort, but an effort that grows and continues to grow. Right? Not that, well, I'm doing better than you, so therefore I'm... No. You got to be doing better than you were yesterday. And we continue to improve and continue to grow. Great. Now, I don't have any quick fix solutions for the laundry. I don't have any quick fix solutions for the dishes other than get a dishwasher and wait for your kids to be old enough to do it themselves. Which, does that ever... Someone have to get with me later and see if that actually does happen. Where when they get old enough, do the dish problems go away? From my childhood, I don't think so. No, I still got beatings up until I was 18 over that. But no, you know what I do have quick fix solutions for? A lot of the problems that are happening spiritually in your home. Well, it's just me in there. Yeah, but I bet there's still a lot of spiritual problems with it just being you. Right? What we need to do is we need to have an idea of work. We need to have a heart to labor. And not just labor, but to continue to get better in our laboring. Ruth did amazing things. She made this great commitment to Naomi, where you go, I'll go. But it wasn't just a poetic country love song type thing. It wasn't just something that you could maybe put into a Shakespearean play. It was a devotion that came with responsibility, and she kept that responsibility. And that is a message that is deeply needed by people today, that I'm going to both make commitments, withhold those responsibilities in the most godly way possible. And that ought to be our heart, that everything I do goes to the Lord. And it's part of that commitment that I make to Him. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I pray, Lord, that we have the heart